The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 24th of September, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Neil Ricketts, Chief Executive Officer of Versarion, VRS, the sticker there. And Neil discusses their AGM statement, which covers progress within different sections of the business. Also on the podcast, Morris Tracy, co-founder and Chief Commercial Officer of Open Orphan, ORPH. And Morris talks about his background and provides an overview of the company. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, if you receive an RNS via the app, that's the Vox Markets app, free to download, yeah, absolutely free, but, priceless, then, and you like the content of that RNS, then hit the thumbs up button. It's within the RNS, and it could feature on this podcast, and also the front page right here at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, CEO of Versarion. VRS is ticker there. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Always a pleasure.
Yes, well, this is a busy day to you. Your AGM out today and lots of things going on, so thanks for sort of squeezing us in here. And but as always, I like to do this because you haven't been on for a while, and I know there's new people listening all the time. I get suggested companies who have been on the podcast. I think, well, have a listen to the podcast, and you may have heard that company on the podcast. So if somebody's listening right now and it's the first time they've heard of your company, Neil, just, you know, summarise it for them if you could.
Sure, no problem. So this is a company that started in 2011, listed in 2013 to exploit ideas and technologies that were in UK universities. We have a number of agreements with UK universities, and what we're focusing on at the moment is the development and the commercialization of the wonder material, graphene.
Yeah, exactly. It is a wonder material. All right, 11 a.m. today at the offices of Gloucester Rugby Club. In Gloucester, you're having your AGM, and you're going to be doing a bit of a statement there, which you've released in an RNS this morning. So take us through, Neil, what you'll be saying there, or in the basis of summary of that, if you could.
Yeah, sure. So what we're seeing here, is, as it's titled, is kind of significant advances in the activities that we've been involved in over the last couple of months. We've got commercial agreements being drawn up. These are some of the largest sports companies. And what we're getting to is the real nitty-gritty of the commercial, the way the commercial is going to work. You know, who owns the IP? Who owns the royalties? You know, what is involved in getting, you know, co-branded and all of these kind of things that are always part of the negotiation at this stage. And that's a significantly advanced stage for us to be able to report that now. And it says in the RNS that that should be coming along pretty, you know, into a commercial agreement pretty quickly. So, mm-hmm. You know, from my point of view as the largest shareholder, this is significant progress. This is no longer a kind of fancy science project. This is actually people talking about putting it into, everyday items.
Yeah, and do you know what I've been reading about, or watching on telly as well, about the trade talks in China and the US, and a lot of that is about IP, and apparently there's issues with Americans worried about their IP in China. What's your thoughts on that, Neil? Because obviously you've had lots of dealings now with companies and corporations in China. What's your thoughts there?
Well, so I think, my advice to any company going over there is to go in with your eyes wide open. And what we've got here is we've got a fairly robust IP strategy anyway. There's no doubt that companies need to be involved in China because it's the kind of engine room of the world now. You know, that's where most goods are manufactured. It doesn't matter whether it's mobile phones or, cars now. You know, they're all getting, manufactured over there. So you can't not be involved, but you need to have all of the protection mechanisms in place. And in fact, this RNS, you know, goes at length to tell you that what we've done as part of our protection mechanism is to involve not only the UK government but also the Chinese government in order to give us that kind of big brother approach to protecting our IP.
Yeah, and so you're quite confident of operations out there and how it's going then?
Yeah, I mean, for us, the big thing in this statement and the thing that the guys have been working on, Matt from the Department of International Trade, who's seconded to us at the moment, has only literally just flown back into the country. It'll be our AGM today, but he flew in over the weekend. And it's a major project. This is no longer a UK company just going to China to set up a manufacturing facility, which is what we originally spoke about just over a year ago. This is actually about being embedded into a national manufacturing strategy. And you can see that there's several references to organizations which are looking at this 25-year Chinese government manufacturing plan. And we're kind of included in those conversations. So for a small company based in Cheltenham that only started a few years ago, to be included and to be courted by such a large superpower to all intents and purposes is kind of amazing. And we've got as part of our negotiating strategy, as well as IP, we've also made sure that this is sustainable and that this has commercial traction and that it has all of the support that we need. So it is a complicated and it is an ever-evolving plan, but one that's only just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, involving more and more provinces.
Yeah, absolutely. And just digging again to the... you're trialling a new grade of concrete at the Engineering Innovation Centre.
Yeah, so we're focused currently on five main strategies. I think four of them have been released. So the textiles that's in this RNS, the ACOM arch, which has also been announced, and now this concrete one, which is also for ACOM. It kind of signifies the relationship we have with our customers and our collaborators, in that we start working on a single project in a single area, and then it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And this one is a real disruptive technology to using graphene in concrete to reduce CO2 and to make a big positive impact into the economy, but also to improve the mechanical properties and overcome some of the downsides to using different types of concrete. So, it's a phenomenal kind of opportunity for us to be able to demonstrate this technology has been supported by UK government all over the world.
Yeah. And one other thing, I mean, so one or two people comment saying about China, saying it's taken longer than expected. And is that expected when dealing with China? Is that kind of thing expected?
I mean, China is a difficult place to do negotiations anyway, but the issue here is not that it's taking any longer. The issue here is that it's just become far bigger than we ever anticipated. And that's a really positive thing. If we were desperate to put out, fluffy RNSs, then, that would be, we could rush into a deal. But we've got cash, we've got a really good plan, we've got all the commercial aspects coming on at the moment, this things like this textile and the ACOM and so on. And so we will make sure, as it says in the final part of the RNS, that we do the best deal we can for the shareholders. Mm-hmm. And the best way of always negotiating is from a position of strength, and one where you are not rushing to make decisions that you may regret later on.
Yeah, and is it too early to put a sort of time frame on when you expect to see, further progress here towards?
Yeah, there's a full Gantt chart, and we've kind of gone through all the hoops now, and so it's always difficult to put time frames on, because you set expectations that may or may not be changed by other events, especially with the current political environment that we're in at the moment. No one can really see what's going to happen moving forward. But the team is very confident that it will be delivered in a very short period of time. So,
marvellous stuff. Excellent, Neil. One final thing, as always, before you go: three reasons if someone isn't following the story. Three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, sure. So the first one is the level of collaborations we have with multinational companies, which is demonstrated in this RNS through our textiles collaboration. The second reason is for the level of support and help from foreign governments and also our own government in taking this technology and putting it on the world stage. So the secondments from DIT and facilitate these kind of conversations with the Chinese. Mm-hmm. And the last thing is that I'm the largest shareholder, and you can guarantee that my hopes and ambitions are all aligned with those of the long-term holders.
Marvellous stuff. Good to chat to you, Neil. Have a good day today, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Maurice Tracy, co-founder and chief commercial officer of Open Orphan. That's ORPH ticker. Maurice, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. It's good to speak to you because we've had Cahill on a few times and he's explained the vision and what Open Orphan is about and the start of a very exciting journey. But if people are listening right now, Maurice, and they're not familiar with the company, could you just give a brief summary as to what it's all about, please?
Yeah, sure. Open Orphan. Orphan refers to products to treat rare disease. Rare disease is defined as, you know, 1 in 2,000 people or less. It's a huge market, the biggest growing segment of the pharma sector. Open Orphan is doing high-end consulting, clinical trials, but also corralling data in our health data activity to really drive research into new orphan products for rare disease patients.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And so at the moment, like I said, there's sort of four legs to the business, aren't there? There's Open Orphan, which is a services pharmaceutical services company, and like I said, you're fixing that, and then there's the data platforms. So first of all, and acquisitions, of course, as well, going on there. So, yeah. Is there a priority, or are you working on all of them together, these legs there, Maurice?
Well, I think we're doing a few things in parallel, and that's kind of the benefit of the great team. So, for example, in Venn, we are correcting Venn and like kind of correcting staff utilizations, a few operational things, and I think that is great. And that will really get Venn focus on its existing customers, which are all repeat, by the way, and then drive new customers, especially in the orphan space. And, I mean, the opportunity here is the disparity of orphan products on the market approved in the US, 520. There's only 180 in Europe. And so we're driving to be the pan-European provider of, remember, orphan services to bring those orphan products from the US, already approved, into the European market and into the major European markets as a one-stop shop to do that in Europe.
Yeah, and how is progress at the moment? I mean, like I said, just started. Is it going to plan?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the first arm, and that is going to plan. And Cal's been working very on the ground, you know, with the operational folks, as has the whole team, myself and Brendan Buckley. That's really driving it. We're getting new customers, so that's kind of a key activity. And then there is the two other arms as well, the virtual rep, digital engagement platform, and then there's a health data, genomic database, which I'm driving that initiative largely. So, I mean, there is those four arms. The correction or the operational excellence that we're putting on top of Venn Life Sciences is happening. We are talking to many customers, and in the two digital platforms, we're actively getting the platforms up and ready and talking to customers.
Yeah. And data side of it, I mean, tell us about your background. Tell us what your story, where you've come from to be where you are today, then, if you could, Maurice.
Yeah, sure. Happy to. Well, I'm a scientist by training, PhD in Dublin, UCD, and did my postdoc in San Diego, the big biotech hub, and then also in Boston, the other biotech hub in the US. You know, I've been in the pharmaceutical, biotech, life science space all my career after my PhD. So I've worked in Merck Serono. That was Serono initially acquired by Merck. Then it was also in Genetics Institute, one of the former like biotech companies with Amgen and Genentech. It was one of those kind of early ones. We were acquired by American Home Products, which ended up being Wyeth, and then also became Pfizer. So I was there through the whole going from biotech into big pharma and the acquisition associated with that. But always in all those positions, I've always been driven by and better understanding of disease and how we can interpret disease to interact with it and either treat or cure for patient benefit. So that was the reason why I got into the pharmaceutical sector in the first place. But then also, you know, doing something really innovative. And, you know, my whole career, as well as doing all those things, has been really using genomic technologies as they've evolved over the last 20 years to really drive what we're doing in Open Orphan today.
Yeah. And tell us about the potential here of the data platform, because there's a few sort of bit of news gone through recently, hasn't it, regarding big companies buying data.
Yeah, there has been a lot of those, and you know them. I assume the customers and the listeners know them as well. But you know, it is the data is a big driver here, and the reason why this is happening is because there's been a really coalescence of four different ingredients that has allowed that happen. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is this data is available. Like human genome data is easy to do. The sequencing is a commodity almost at this point, so you can get your human genome sequence in a few hours these days. That's the first thing. It's a huge amount of data, and now the data can be analyzed efficiently. So this big data activity, you hear people talking about doing it in encrypted mode, doing it using artificial intelligence, that is now available. That wasn't available 10, 20 years ago. So that's one thing. The fact that people now have the ability to control their data under the new data protection legislation, GDPR, that really allows them to decide where their data goes. So companies are looking for the data. So companies that have that data in a corralled kind of secure database are going to be the winners. The third thing is the know-how. We're getting to know the science so that, you know, you can understand what the data means and interpret that in a way within the pharmaceutical and academic institutions as well, let me say, how you can use that data to really drive better understanding of disease. And then fourthly, really good technologies to use that data to drive new drug products, be it biologic products, small molecules, or the new CAR T technologies, where you optimize the drug for the patient. So it's those four things, Justin, that have really allowed this data to be really valuable. And so what Open Orphan is, I don't know if you want me to jump into that now.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, in the Health Data Initiative, it really is. Rare disease patients as a group, they're probably the most clinically analyzed group of patients ever. You know, they're on this odyssey, they don't know what the disease is. It's very humiliating, debilitating for both the patient and their parents, because most rare disease patients, they're probably people under 18, their children, often pediatric patients, and then it goes on for a long time. But they have a huge amount of data, and in a lot of cases, it's just sitting there languishing. So what we're hoping to do, together with engaging with patients directly and then also with the patient advocacy groups, let's mobilize that data. Let's mobilize it so that we can drive research for new treatments in these rare diseases. We're doing that through the health database. And how that is being kind of put together is really just talking to the advocacy groups and patients saying, listen, do you want to share your data with us? We're happy to put it securely into our database. It's pseudo-anonymized. It's completely controlled by you. You can take it out, you can withdraw at any point in time, and you're never ever going to be, identified in this database, because the database, it's a little bit about you, but it's more about the collective, the 100 other patients that have the same disease as you that collect and corral their data securely into the Open Orphan database. That's really what we're doing. And really what we're doing with that database, and we do some little bit of standardization and make it in a format whereby it's analyzable or accessible to the pharmaceutical companies, and the fees they give us for that access, we would share some of that back to the patient advocacy groups to really put in place better services, support networks, and resources for these patients. So we want to keep the patient at the center of this. We also want to give good data to pharmaceutical companies so they can analyze that data in a way, and again, I want to emphasize securely, they can do it in a way that they can use the data to re-identify these new genetic targets that will be the base of new products going forward.
Yeah, and I suppose when you, like you say, you're putting the patient at the center there, and it's a win-win, isn't it, really?
Well, it is, because it's the data is already there. Why just let it sit there? So let's drive the data. The patients choose whether they want to be in this or not. This is completely voluntary. No one's coercing or anything. This is completely up to the patient. And some people may choose to do it, and I understand that completely. And some people may not, and I understand both sides. But what we're saying, of those people who would like to have their data used for this activity, let's do it. And in the process of doing that, give something back to them so that they have better support services, because what drives patients is what do they face on a day-to-day basis. I mean, it's great if we get a drug in 5, 10 years, 15 years, whatever it may be, or better diagnosis even, because that is another outcome from this database. But fundamentally, we're also trying to improve the day-to-day living of these patients a little bit more immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. And from a commercial point of view, it's this model is quite scalable, low cost, isn't it, I suppose?
Well, so, I mean, a lot of the commodity components of this, like the sequencing, a lot of companies are doing that. We choose not to do that because with the very specific situation we're in with rare disease patients, most of the data pre-exists. So there's no real need to do it. But really what we're doing is trying to mobilize the data into this format. That still has a cost, but it's a minimal cost for sure. We're not doing the heavy lifting of getting the data. We're just mobilizing the data in one secure location. So that is at a more efficient cost. And that can be a benefit, obviously, to Open Orphan. And then also to what we would get in access fees from the pharmaceutical companies. Yeah, so it is a lower cost model.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as, like you say, you're a co-founder there, what's your ambition here then, Morris, for the company?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, obviously we can drive this. This company has been turned around in the last 3 months. If you look even at the share price, you know, we're three times above where we were a few months ago. So you have a great team of people here. We can do something really significant, and we can help patients. So if we can do that, you know, and have a great valuation, you know, that's a great win-win for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous stuff. Okay, if someone's listening right now, Morris likes the sound of the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, I think we're a company that has a lot, where the ethos is about delivering orphan products. Let's do it to the benefit of patients, the advocacy groups that help them, and Open Orphan. So this can be a win-win for everyone. So that there's three reasons in there alone. And, you know, fundamentally, I think we can do something really great here in the orphan drug space.
Excellent stuff. Morris, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're at five, Minds and Machines Group, MMX. Some decent results out from those guys today. At four, Metro Bank, down 18%. People chasing that one. Something about, I don't know, I've failed to follow the story anymore. Business plan model. I realise I took a punt on them a while back, and someone pointed out, well, they're doing, you know, high street banks. That's a dying model. It's like Thomas Cook's shops in the high street. No one's going to use them. Who wants, only, you know, people who can't use the internet, that's all. And let's be honest, they are dying off. At three, Bidstack Group, BIDS, bouncing after a sort of oversold position. And James announcing on LinkedIn he's keen to get some news out there. At two, SafeStay, SSTY. Again, another acquisition there and building the company. But no reaction from the share price. Internet, hopefully results will come out very soon. Moving in the right direction. And number one, Petra Diamonds, PDL. There's a bit of talk about that on social media there. Haven't looked into it, but people are amassing. Okay, top five most liked RNSs come from the following companies. At five, Bluebird Merchant Ventures, Gubong Permit Approval Update. At four, Hummingbird Resources, Settlement of Claim from Taurus Funds Management. At three, UK Oil and Gas, Rig Arrival at Horse Hill. At two, Vesarion, AGM Statement. And number one, most liked RNS, came from SafeStay Acquisition, now the 16th, of course, hostel. And it's in Venice, and it's big, very big, 600 beds. And let's be honest, in a place like Venice, you'll fill those beds. Good margin, and good deal there. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.